Welcome to War on the Mind. I'm Scott, your host, the voice in the ether, coming to you from the city of Glasgow. In my previous episode, I read an article from The Telegraph, which was about the CIA's involvement in setting up the European Union. During that episode, I mentioned a book called Foundations, which looked at the Rees Committee from the early 1950s. The book is called Foundations, Their Power and Influence by Rennie Wurmser. And the book was first published in 1958. Now, the Rees Committee was created to investigate the tax-exempt foundations within America, such as the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and Carnegie Foundation, and basically to see if these foundations were being un-American through subversive activities. So this book ties in with the Telegraph article that I read on the previous episode. The 2016 article also has a link to an older Telegraph article back in the year 2000, and I'm going to quickly read through that article and then read some passages from the book Foundations by Rennie Wurmser, just to show how it all ties together. Okay, so this Telegraph article is called Eurofederalists Financed by US Spy Chiefs by Ambrose Evans Pritchard in Brussels, and it's dated 19th of September 2000. So, first paragraph says, "Declassified American government documents show that the US intelligence community ran a campaign in the 50s and 60s to build momentum for a united Europe. It funded and directed the European Federalist Movement." Second paragraph, "The documents confirm suspicions voiced at the time that America was working aggressively behind the scenes to push Britain into a European state. One memorandum dated July 26, 1950 gives instructions for a campaign to promote a fully fledged European Parliament. It is signed by General William J. Donovan, head of the American Wartime Office of Strategic Services, i.e. the OSS, precursor of the CIA. Third paragraph, "The documents were found by Joshua Paul, a researcher at Georgetown University in Washington. They include files released by the US National Archives. Washington's main tool for shaping the European agenda was the American Committee for a United Europe, and so that's known as the ACUE, which was created in 1948. The chairman was Donovan, ostensibly a private lawyer by then. Paragraph 4, "The vice chairman was Alan Dulles, the CIA director in the 50s. The board included Walter Bedell Smith, the CIA's first director, and a roster of ex-OSS figures and officials who moved in and out of the CIA. The documents show that ACUE financed the European Movement, the most important Federalist organization in the post-war years. In 1958, for example, it provided 53.5% of the movement's funds." Right, so paragraph 5, "The European Youth Campaign, an arm of the European Movement, was wholly funded and controlled by Washington. The Belgian director, Baron Bol, received monthly payments into a special account. When the head of the European Movement, Polish-born Joseph Reitinger, bridled at this degree of American control and tried to raise money in Europe, he was quickly reprimanded." Okay, paragraph 6. "The leaders of the European Movement, Reitinger, the visionary Robert Schuman, and the former Belgian Prime Minister Paul-Henri Spaak were all treated as hired hands by their American sponsors. The US role was handled as a covert operation. ACUE's funding came from the Ford and Rockefeller foundations, as well as business groups with close ties to the US government. Paragraph 7. The head of the Ford Foundation, ex-OSS officer Paul Hoffman, doubled as head of ACUE in the late 50s. The State Department also played a role. A memo from the European section dated June 11, 1965, advises the Vice President of the European Economic Community, Robert Marjolin, to pursue monetary union by stealth. Paragraph 8. It recommends suppressing debate until the point at which adoption of such proposals would become virtually inescapable. So yeah, that's the end of the Telegraph article. So America was not the only country involved in this. It's definitely naive to think that America was the only country who was pushing for a united Europe. And so yeah, the American Committee for a United Europe had Alan Dulles as the vice chairman, and this was back in 1948. And in the 1950s, Alan Dulles became director of Central Intelligence. And let's not also forget that Alan Dulles was recruited into the OSS during the Second World War, which was basically a predecessor to the Central Intelligence Agency. Alan Dulles also became director of the Council on Foreign Relations in New York in 1927, and obviously the CFR being a branch of the Rhodes-Milner Group. And well, on the subject of the Rhodes-Milner Group, it's interesting that Chatham House, the UK branch, was used for intelligence department and Ministry of Information during the Second World War. Also, remember that the CFR came out openly on the news and said that they had drafted up the integration of the Americas, meaning Mexico, Canada and America. The Telegraph article also talks about ex-OSS within the ACUE, and this ties in with what Norman Dodds of the Rees Committee was talking about when he had his conversation with Rowan Gaither, who was the president of the Ford Foundation. And Rowan Gaither said that ex-OSS work in the Ford Foundation, and we basically get our directives from the White House. Anyway, I'm now going to read from the book Foundations by Rennie Wurmser. This book is published by the Devin Adair Company in New York, and I'm going to quote brief passages from the book. Okay, so I'm going to start at chapter 7, which is called Foundation Impact on Foreign Policy, and this is on page 200. And the subheading is The Foundation Complex in Internationalism. Foundation activity has nowhere had a greater impact than in the field of foreign affairs. It has conquered public opinion and has largely established the international political goals of our country. A few major foundations with internationalist tendencies created or fostered a varied group of organisations which now dominate the research, the education, and the supply of experts in the field. Among such instruments are the Council on Foreign Relations, the Foreign Policy Association, the Institute of Pacific Relations, the United Nations Association and the conferences and seminars held by American universities on international relations and allied subjects. It would be difficult to find a single foundation-supported organisation of any substance which has not favoured the United Nations or similar global schemes. Fantastically heavy foreign aid at the burdensome expense of the taxpayer, meddling in the colonial affairs of other nations, and American military commitments over the globe. Though the sums of money put up by the internationalist-minded foundations may seem relatively small in comparison with larger grants spent elsewhere, they have enabled their satellite or subsidised organisations to play a conspicuous and dominating role. This was comparatively easy to accomplish because there was no organised or foundation or foundation-supported opposition. The influence of the foundation complex in internationalism has reached far into government, into the policy-making circles of Congress, and into the State Department. This has been effected through the pressure of public opinion, mobilised by the instruments of the foundations, through the promotion of foundation favourites as teachers and experts in foreign affairs, through a domination of the learned journals in international affairs, through the frequent appointment of State Department officials to foundation jobs, and through the frequent appointment of foundation officials to State Department jobs. At least one foreign foundation has had a strong influence on our foreign policy. The Rhodes Scholarship Fund of Great Britain, created to improve England's international public relations, but not registered here as a foreign agent, has gained great influence in the United States for British ideas. It has accomplished this by annually selecting a choice group of promising young men for study in England. The usually Anglophile alumni of this system are to be found in eminent positions of legislation, administration and education, and in the ranks of American foundation officials. They form a patronage network of considerable importance. Dr. Frank Adelotti, in a book, The Rhodes Trust, 1903 to 1953, published in 1956, reported the influence of this group on American educational practice, and particularly on the rapidly increasing maturity and breadth of methods of instruction in American institutions of higher learning, has been immense. He continued, "The number of those going into government is constantly increasing. Of a total of 1,372 American Rhodes Scholars up to 1953, 431 held or hold positions in teaching and educational administration, among them 31 college presidents. 113 held government positions, 70 held positions in press and radio, and 14 were executives in other foundations." Dr. Adelotti remarks, "One indication of the success of operations of the Rhodes Scholarships in America is the remarkable way in which they have inspired other foundations." He reports that the Guggenheim Fellowships and the program of the Commonwealth Fund set up by Mr. Harkness and several similar programs were developed with the aid of officials of the Rhodes Fund. Dean Rusk, president of the Rockefeller Foundation, and several of the staff members of the foundation are Rhodes Scholars. Mr. Henry Allen Moe, the director of the Guggenheim Foundation, and O.C. Carmichael, former president former president of the Carnegie Foundation are Rhodes Scholars, Senator J.W. Fulbright, Congressman C.R. Klassen, R. Hale, and C.B. Albert, and 14 American state legislators are also Rhodes alumni. Among the many Rhodes Scholars connected with our Department of State are these: Ambassador to the Netherlands, S.K. Hornbeck, formerly Chief of Far Eastern Affairs in the Department; B.M. Hull, former Chief of North America, B.M. Hull, former Chief of North European Affairs in the Department; W. Walter Butterworth, former Assistant Secretary of State for Eastern Affairs; U.S. Ambassador for Sweden, Deputy Chief U.S. Mission to London; Walter Gordon, U.S. Embassy in London, in charge of Economic Affairs, with the rank of Minister; and G.C. McGee, Ambassador to Turkey. Before becoming President of the Rockefeller Foundation, Dean Rusk served as a Deputy Undersecretary of State. Dr. Adelotti reports that in addition, 12 Rhodes Scholars were attached to various intergovernmental agencies, in brackets, ILO, UN, etc., close brackets. It may not be merely coincidental to this subject that Cecil Rhodes, who created the scholarships, and Andrew Carnegie were friends. The latter may have learned from the former the technique of accomplishing great efforts with relatively modest means. Carnegie contributed but a small part of his wealth to the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Yet this comparatively small unit grew to have gigantic influence on American foreign affairs. Okay, so that's the end of that quote. And now I'm going to move on to page 206. Right, so page 206. The 1946 report of the Rockefeller Foundation also minced no words in advocating globalism. It reads, "The challenge of the future is to make this world one world, a world truly free to engage in common and constructive intellectual efforts that will serve the welfare of mankind everywhere. The ideal of a united world as a basis for permanent peace is a splendid one, but the executives of the International Minded Foundations have committed two serious errors in promoting it. One is that they have been in too great haste to translate into immediate action an ideal which might take another century of extremely careful planning and adjustment to accomplish. The other has been that the common world which they have envisioned and to which they have sought to rush us is unquestionably an extended international collectivism. And the Rees Committee came to this conclusion. The weight of evidence before this committee, which the foundations have made no serious effort to rebut, indicates that the form of globalism, which the foundations have so actively promoted, and from which our foreign policy has suffered seriously, relates definitely to a collectivist point of view. Despite vehement disclaimers of bias, despite platitudinous affirmations of loyalty to American traditions, The statements filed by those foundations whose operations touch on foreign policy have produced no rebuttal to the evidence of support of collectivism. And that's the end of that quote. Okay, so my last quote is on page 209. And the title for this is The Council on Foreign Relations. And it's quite a short wee paragraph, which is not surprising. I quote, the Council on Foreign Relations, another member of the international complex, financed both by the Rockefeller and Carnegie Foundations, overwhelmingly propagandizes the globalist concept. This organization became virtually an agency of the government when World War II broke out. The Rockefeller Foundation had started and financed certain studies known as the War and Peace Studies, manned largely by associates of the Council. The State Department in due course took over these studies, retaining the major personnel which the Council on Foreign Relations had supplied. And that's the end of that quote. So I think I'll stop there. And if you have done your research into the Rhodes-Milner group, that there was and is a long-term agenda to bring in three main trading blocks under a world-governing organisation. This is being achieved by stealth. All the mainstream media are on board with this. As I say, if you want to go into more depth on the subject, then check out Alan Watt, spelt A-L-A-N-W-A-T-T. And look into his website where you'll find hundreds of talks on this particular subject. And I hope you get something out of this episode, and thank you for listening, and bye for now.